Trading Club Update, Week 16. The value of the Trading Club tracking portfolio settled at $123,913 as of Thursday, April 23, up 23.9% since our May 30 launch. See the detailed portfolio snapshot below. We made no trades this week. In today's update, we review the latest earnings results from the world's largest nicotine company, Philip Morris International, NYSE, PM, and continue our deep dive series into software stocks with an overview of Constellation Software, OTC, CNSWF. Philip Morris rallies on double-digit earnings growth. Philip Morris International, NYSE, PM, the world's largest nicotine company, delivered excellent Q1 earnings on Wednesday. Revenue increased 9.1% year-on-year, YI, to $10.1 billion, while earnings per share, EPS, grew 16% YI to $1.96. Both numbers exceeded analyst estimates. The company's smoke-free segment, which now makes up 43% of total sales, generated 25% revenue growth. This standout performance came from the IQOS heat-not-burn devices and tobacco sticks, with shipment volumes increasing 11%. IQOS remains the most dominant heat-not-burn brand globally, ending Q1 with a commanding 77% global market share. The results on ZYN nicotine pouches were mixed. Shipment volumes in the key U.S. market declined 24%, a drop caused by excess inventories accumulated by retailers last year. The company reported that Nielsen data on retail-level sales, that is, direct sales to consumers, indicated a 10% increase in store-level sales for ZYN during Q1. While ZYN growth is decelerating, the brand remains the clear category leader with over 50% market share. Philip Morris is also investing heavily into developing new pouch designs and flavors, with the total addressable market in the U.S. alone expected to reach $10 billion by 2030. This segment on its own should quickly become a multi-billion-dollar business, even if ZYN surrenders some market share along the way. The overall pie is growing fast enough for multiple leading brands to earn healthy returns. Meanwhile, the combustible segment of the business, that is, cigarettes, remains a resilient cash cow, with strong pricing power offsetting the ongoing volume declines. Despite a 5.1% drop in cigarette shipments, higher prices contributed to a 6.8% YI increase in sales in Q1. Marlboro remains the global leader in traditional cigarettes, and the pricing power of this brand continues generating solid profits despite falling volumes. Looking ahead, the positive momentum from Q1 is expected to persist throughout the year, with management forecasting $8.44 in EPS for 2026, up 12% from last year. At a recent price of $165 per share, Philip Morris trades at just under 20x this year's expected earnings. We view this as a bargain price for one of the world's best businesses that's generating consistent double-digit earnings growth. Next up is a close look at one of our latest software recommendations. The Berkshire Hathaway of Software Constellation Software, OTC, CNSWF, is a serial acquirer. It's in the business of buying other businesses. We call it the Berkshire Hathaway of Software because founder Mark Leonard studied and replicated many elements of Warren Buffett's playbook when building the business. And while many have tried and failed to replicate Buffett's investing strategy, we'll show how Leonard was the one student who arguably surpassed the master. The story begins in the early 1990s, when a young Mark Leonard worked as a venture capitalist for the Toronto-based VC firm Ventures West. When analyzing the firm's track record, Leonard discovered that the highest success rate came from a particular type of software business known as vertical market software, or VMS. Unlike horizontal software companies that serve many different types of industries, like Salesforce, CRM, or Adobe, ADBE, for example, VMS companies focus on small, very specialized market segments. Examples include software businesses that handle utility billing for water districts, permitting for building departments, cemetery management, and transit scheduling systems. These unglamorous businesses almost never generated the 100-to-1 moonshot returns that most VCs lusted after, but they were by far the most reliable source of consistent, market-beating returns. Leonard zeroed in on a specific class of VMS businesses that make for excellent investments. These were companies that performed mission-critical services deeply embedded into customer workflows, often for decades. This naturally created high switching costs, particularly for slow-moving bureaucratic organizations. Think about billing software for a local municipal water authority. The sheer hassle involved in moving decades' worth of customer ID and payment information over to a whole new system creates a high degree of institutional inertia. Plus, the expense of the software is minuscule relative to a customer's total overhead, often making up less than 1% of total operating costs. Moving to an unproven upstart simply isn't worth the risk of disrupting their entire operation just to shave a few dollars of the annual software bill. Meanwhile, there's not much innovation involved in creating software that performs basic administrative tasks. That means little in the way of research and development or capital expenditures, leading to high profit margins and asset-light business models. And given the lack of competition in these small niche markets, VMS companies can command significant pricing power. All of these characteristics met the same basic criteria of Buffett's greatest investments: high margin, capital-efficient businesses with sticky customers, enduring competitive moats, and pricing power. But there was one thing they lacked: big upside. No one ever made the 100-to-1 returns buying the cemetery management software company serving the rural Ontario market. The addressable markets were simply too small. This meant that the VC community passed on countless opportunities in small, but highly lucrative VMS companies. Leonard's key insight was that the obscurity of these businesses made them all the more valuable, at least from the acquirer's perspective. You could buy them cheaply because no one else wanted them. So in 1995, he raised $25 million to launch Constellation Software with one vision in mind: acquire the small, niche VMS businesses that no one else bothered to buy, and then reinvest the cash flows from those businesses and into additional acquisitions. And unlike Buffett, who in recent decades strayed away from his core competency and began getting into things like railroads and regulated utilities, Constellation has remained true to its founding vision for three decades, and the results of this disciplined focus speak for themselves. Since going public in 2006, Constellation has compounded shareholder capital at an incredible 30% per year. That makes it one of the greatest success stories in the history of financial markets, outperforming Berkshire itself by 20% annually since inception. A $1,000 investment into Constellation Software at its IPO would now be worth $182,206 versus $7,907 for the same investment into Berkshire Hathaway over the same period. Notably, that's after a recent 50% price correction in Constellation's share price. One core component of Buffett's approach Leonard implemented at Constellation was a buy-and-hold-forever strategy. The inspiration for this came from Leonard's VC experience, seeing firsthand the shortcomings of the buy-and-flip approach. VCs focused on maximizing returns for a typical five-year fund life, which created perverse incentives to boost short-term profitability just before a sale. This meant doing things like laying off skilled, long-tenured, i.e. expensive, employees and aggressively renegotiating contracts with more onerous terms and significant price increases. If it impaired the long-term health of the business, it didn't matter as long as the business could be flipped at a higher price to an unsuspecting buyer. Constellation's buy-and-hold-forever philosophy made it a fundamentally different kind of buyer. Like Buffett, Leonard would often keep the existing leadership in place and allow them to continue running their businesses with minimal oversight. This not only allowed for a long-term approach that would act in the best interest of all stakeholders, but it also gave Constellation a reputation for being one of the most founder-friendly acquirers. This meant Constellation didn't have to compete on price alone. The company's management style resonated with the kind of founders Leonard was targeting: those interested in building successful long-term businesses, and who cared deeply about their employees and customers. The upside for Constellation is that these founders would often be willing to take a lower price in order to retain control over the businesses they had built over decades. This allowed Constellation to avoid overpaying and maintain strict hurdle rates for investment, typically targeting a free cash flow multiple of around 15x. Year after year, Constellation had no trouble scooping up some of the world's best VMS businesses. The results of this framework show up in the financials. Since its inception in 2006, Constellation has increased revenue every single year for a 20-year growth streak, compounding growth at an incredible 22% per year. The business now has approximately 1,500 VMS companies in its portfolio, and continues focusing on niche VMS businesses, with less than $1 billion in revenue. With an estimated 50,000 software companies of this size in the US alone, Constellation has decades of runway to continue executing this proven model. But Leonard never chased growth for growth's sake. He viewed the business as a capital allocation machine, not a software business. And he structured the business to incentivize growth in one core metric: free cash flow, FCF, per share. This is how Constellation avoided one of the biggest traps serial acquirers fall into: treating the company's equity like an endless piggy bank. Too often, these businesses fund acquisitions using equity instead of cash, which makes it easier to overpay for assets. They compound this problem by issuing share-based compensation awards based on top-line metrics like revenue or earnings growth. This creates a fundamental misalignment of incentives between management and shareholders. It encourages executives to pay up for highly dilutive acquisitions, thereby inflating revenue or earnings growth to unlock their next tranche of stock grants. This leads to the sort of empire building that rewards growth at the expense of per-share returns for investors. Constellation pays for its companies the same way it pays employees. in all cash. This makes it one of the rare software companies that issues zero stock-based compensation. And it creates a culture of long-term ownership, where employees must buy their way into the business with their after-tax earnings, instead of being granted risk-free option packages at shareholders' expense. That's how Constellation is one of the only software companies in the world that has maintained the same share count since its 2006 IPO, 22 million shares. And the end result for investors has been an incredible increase in FCF per share, which has compounded at an almost unheard-of 23% per year for the last two decades. Note that this trajectory has not been slowed by the rise of cutting-edge AI tools with the launch of ChatGPT in 2022. Instead, Constellation's cash flow compounding trajectory has only accelerated since then, increasing at a 25% annual rate in the last 3 years. And we believe there are several key features of the business model that make it immune to AI disruption going forward. First, there's the simple fact that AI makes mistakes. Unlike deterministic software programs that reliably produce the same output for a given input, large language models, LLM, such as ChatGPT, Gemini, and Claude, generate probabilistic responses to user prompts. And these models aren't designed to say "I don't know" when faced with incomplete or contradictory information. Instead, they simply settle on the most likely answer, which can lead to hallucinations. This is an unavoidable feature, not a bug, of the inherent design of large language models. And that's why, even after multiple years and trillions of dollars of investment, the leading AI models still routinely make disastrous mistakes, like the recent example of a high-profile Wall Street law firm, Sullivan & Cromwell, filing a legal motion that included made-up sources cited by its AI chatbot, or a recent study that evaluated 21 leading LLMs in diagnosing medical problems, with failure rates that exceeded 80% for all models. So while LLMs can still be powerful tools for low-risk tasks, like research, drafting preliminary texts or writing software, they aren't a substitute for mission-critical software that must be 100% accurate every time. Now, what about the threat of startups using AI to more easily, and cheaply, code alternative software that could displace incumbents? The first thing to note is that incumbent software makers will use those very same AI tools as well. But more importantly is the fact that generating source code is only the first step in creating a software business. And it's arguably the easiest step. The hard part? Gaining the institutional knowledge of niche business models that cater to very specific industry use cases, and staffing software engineers that know how to maintain and secure this code, while also adding new features over time. Finally, you need support staff to service customers, and a sales force that can break into these niche businesses and convince stakeholders to switch from their existing providers. Then there's the question of, what's the upside for making all of these investments? This goes back to the same fundamental constraint that created the original opportunity for Constellation Software in 1995. The addressable markets for the companies it acquires is too small and specialized to attract the attention of large, well-funded competitors. So yes, it's theoretically possible for disruptive new entrants to break into these tiny niche industries. But in practical terms, historically the juice hasn't been worth the squeeze. And there's no reason why this basic risk/reward calculus will change in the age of AI. That's why we believe Constellation will retain its long-running competitive advantage in dominating small, niche VMS markets, and they could even become one of the biggest winners in the current environment. That's because valuations for software companies have plummeted on fears of AI disruption, even when the fundamental sales and earnings outlook have not weakened. This includes Constellation, with the share price down by 50% despite setting new record highs in sales, revenue, and free cash flow. The end result of strong fundamentals and a collapsing share price is that its valuation has been cut in half, now trading at just 20x this year's expected earnings, near the lowest level of the last decade. In the business of buying other businesses, the best thing that can happen is for valuations to collapse. Constellation should now be able to pick up world-class VMS assets on the cheap, leading to higher future returns. But as mentioned in last week's update, we know what to look for to nullify our thesis: declining revenue. In its 20-year history as a public company, Constellation has never had a year of declining revenue. It has thrived through recessions, pandemics, and bear markets. We expect the same will be true going forward. And if we're wrong, we'll have a clear indicator that tells us when to head for the exits. In next week's update, we'll continue our deep dive series into software with Roper Technologies, NASDAQ, ROP. Next, we provide a detailed look at our current portfolio holdings. Portfolio overview. The table below shows all current holdings as of the close of trading on April 23rd. A few notes on how to read and interpret this portfolio table. Please pay special attention to the action column, where we specify whether each trade is a buy or sell to open transaction. Next, the position size for each trade is equal to the current value of the position, with the exception of the cash secured puts, In the case of the cash secured puts, we define the position size as the total value of our future commitment to purchase 100 shares for each contract. This number is calculated as follows. Position size equals number of contracts x 100 x put strike price. We use this number because it accurately reflects our total capital commitment, and thus our total risk exposure on the trade. For example, in the case of the Viper Energy, NASDAQ, VUNM, $48 puts, the position size equals 2 by 100 x $48 equals $9,600. We use this number because it accurately reflects our total capital commitment, and thus our total risk exposure on the trade. To see the current profit/loss across each open position and other details, please see the live snapshot of our tracking portfolio at the end of this update. Next, the links below will take you to each of the original recommendations in the current portfolio, including the 5 call contracts in shares of British American Tobacco, NYSE, BTI, which we covered in our inaugural trade series, here, and in a video recorded on May 30, which can be found here, the June 2 Triple Flag Precious Metals, NYSE, TFPM, recommendation can be found here. The July 24 recommendation of Philip Morris International, NYSE, PM, trades can be found here. The September 24 recommendation of Cellebrite DI, NASDAQ, CLBT, can be found here. The January 21 recommendation of EQT, NYSE, EQT, calls can be found here. The Booz Allen Hamilton, NYSE, BAH, and Celsius Holdings, NASDAQ, CEL, recommendations were published as part of our trade series on Thursday, December 4, which can be found here. The January 23 recommendation of Figma, NYSE, FFE can be found here. We created a special report called the AI Halo that includes the research for LandBridge, NYSE, WaterBridge Infrastructure, NYSE, WBI, and Viper Energy, NASDAQ, VONM, which can be found here. We created a special report detailing how the Invesco QQQ ETF, NASDAQ, QQQ, put option trade works, which can be found here. If you have any questions or feedback, the Trading Club forum is the best chance to get a quick response from our team. Alternatively, you can always email us at mailbag@porterandcompanyresearch.com. Good investing, Ross Hendricks, Porter & Company.